everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And for anyone who's out there, you can find us on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And if you want to listen to us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself on podcasts. And that being said, you can also find me at Justin the Food Entrepreneurs. You can also find me at The Night Dasher with Justin Bizarro. And you can find me at The Centurion Leadership Battalion with Justin Bizarro. And with that being said, I have Stephen DeKemper back from Aegon Pictures. How are you doing?
I'm well, brother. Glad to be back. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. So, Stephen, we left off a little bit on your life and what you do and your experience in film, but I think we got in a pretty deep-seated conversation over higher thinking and higher performance. And I do find it interesting because one of the things we really talk about is what it takes to be a high-performing individual. And it's a lot about mindset and consistency. So I don't know where to start here because we did like an hour-long warm-up. But let's talk about you a little bit more. Let's talk about where you discovered your passion for film. You mentioned going to LA and making a shift to wanting to be in front of the camera versus behind the camera. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, we got where we left off. We sort of went on a tangent and we talked about your family and stuff like that. But where does this idea really start to stem from to be in front of the camera and do what you're doing now and start to writing your own destiny, I would say? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've always been a very fun and like animated person. I've always watched. I used to have like Home Alone 2, Lost in New York and on VHS, and like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, When Nature Calls on VHS. And I would just watch those repeatedly as a kid. And my mom just always thought it was so silly and didn't like Jim Carrey because she was like, he's just too silly. And but it cracked me up and it brought me so much laughter. And I always like to do imitations and just be silly and bring laughter to people because it's fun and it's lighthearted. And something I used to say or think to myself was, hey, a laugh could save a life. And I just, you know, I always enjoyed being silly and animated and getting people involved and just having fun. And, you know, that's just something that's part of me. It's always been a part of me since I can remember. And I was always told, oh, man, you should act or you should be in front of the camera or you should do stand up or whatever. And I did. I always wanted to be that guy, but I just was too nervous. I was kind of had some fear of rejection and didn't think I was good enough. And there was a couple times I tried to get going with it. And, you know, I would get going and I would notice the reactions I would get and people would show up and, you know, tell me, you know, when's, you know, doing stand up, when's your next thing? Or you should do skits, you know, you should do comedy. And I just, every time I kind of would start to get going in and something would happen, you know, and I just didn't follow through it. I would let that thing deter me. And honestly, when I had finished school in Los Angeles in about 2015, now granted, I always had this desire in me, but I was kind of too nervous to really go for it. And after I graduated film school, I remember walking in Venice Beach, I think at the time, and I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I was walking and I saw a palm reader, and the palm reader, just for whatever reason, I was drawn to it. And I was just like, you know what? I'll pay the little $25 or whatever and go in here and get like a palm reading. And, you know, it was a little general, but she didn't really say anything specific, but she said a couple of things. Actually, she told me I was actually getting ready to move from LA to Atlanta, and she knew that I was getting ready to move, and she said a couple of other things, but the main thing that she said, which was kind of broad, but it really made me think about it within myself. And she said, what you're getting ready to do when you go to Atlanta is, or when you're getting ready to move is what you've always wanted to do, and you know that you've always wanted to do it, and you need to stop dicking around and commit to it. And I had been pondering the acting thing for a while, and I said, you know what, when I go to Atlanta, I'm gonna focus on acting. And so I moved there and I began to focus on acting, and actually very quickly I got representation and was going on auditions and was booking things, but I still had this experience with film, or with the crew side of being in the camera department and cinematography and stuff like that. So I would audition for things and book little things here and there, but also I was establishing relationships on the crew side, and the crew, and I had a wonderful agent, and she was sending me on great auditions, and some of, you know, some of them I would get, some of them I wouldn't. And I had the, I still had my crew experience. So when things were moving slow with the acting, I could kind of fall back on the crew side, and the crew work that I got began to pick up for me, and I just kind of let the acting fall to the wayside because I was making money doing the crew work and building relationships there, and you know, booking TV shows and movies in locations department or a camera and electric or grip and electric or in the camera department or as a dolly grip or you know, as a locations assistant, or you know, I've done a whole bunch of different positions. I've done wardrobe, everything. So I've been a PA. So I've been a background extra. I've been everything. So that began to take off for me on the crew side. But I just remember being on set, you know, working in camera department, which I enjoy. But I would see the camera, you know, pointing at the actors, and I just would be like, man, that's like, that should be me. I gotta, like, I want to be that guy, you know? And I just, that was always inside of me. And then after everything that happened with my dad, that was really the thing that made me really go for it and say, you know what, I'm not going backwards. I'm just only solely focusing on, you know, talent and being in front of the camera.
I like this a lot, actually. I like what we're talking about here, and I like that it's had such an impact on you. So let's talk about this a little bit more. Like, what's this burning desire inside of you? Obviously, you've always had the desire to want to achieve more or make more of your life. That's why you've sort of pursued these dreams, went to LA, went to school. You know, what is it that's driving you? What is it inside of you? What are you trying to accomplish ultimately?
You know, that's a great question. I just wanna leave my mark, and I wanna take care of my family, and I wanna inspire and help people, you know, and it's very, they're kind of very cool, like very simple things, but I mean, I've always wanted to make movies with my brothers, you know. That's something that's very near and dear to me, and that's a huge motivational piece for me, and it's something that I've never let go of. You know, I just think that I can do this, and you know, I can put myself in a position to where I'll be able to, excuse me, I'll put myself in a position where I'll be able to, you know, bring them onto a set or help them, because you know, I grew up wanting to be like my older brothers, and we would, you know, play and be silly with each other and quote movies all the time. And it was just something that I love doing. I love spending time with my family. I love, you know, quoting movies in the right time and being silly and lighthearted. And that was just something we always connected over. And I just was like, I want to do that. This is what I want to do, you know? And over time, I stuck with it and stuck with it. And I saw, you know, the further I went, I saw that they were be encouraging me, like, keep going, keep going. Oh, it's so cool, man. You did this, or you met this person, or you worked on this set. And, you know, they would be proud of me. And I want to be able to, again, leave my mark. I want to be able to bring them in and get them involved. I want to be able to, you know, have a family legacy, you know, change the course of my family's history. I want to be able to help other people, just like I've been impacted by the people that I grew up watching, you know, whether it's actors or filmmakers. Those people are the ones who, you know, through some athletes, but filmmakers and actors are some of the people that I look up to the most, who, you know, they're my heroes. And I kind of wanted to be like those guys. And over time, I began to shift that and say, okay, well, I can be my own version of this, you know, and I want to, you know, help to inspire the next generation. And it kind of became not really about me anymore. And it became about my family and wanting to help others and inspire others. And I think when we kind of began to make the shift internally from ourselves into thinking about others and how we can serve others by putting myself in a position or being able to accomplish certain things, yes, I benefit from it, but the more I benefit, the more I can help other people. And, you know, it's something that my dad really, you know, taught me and instilled in me. And that was a big core motivational or a core value and key factor for him, something that him and I connected on. And it's very simple about why he did the work that he did. He started it for one reason, but the reason why he ended it and kept doing it until his very last breath was he just wanted to continue to help as many people as he could. And this is just how I see I'm able to do the same thing.
I love this. Before I ask you a question, do you want to add on to it at all?
I mean, it's the core of everything, man. It's very simple, you know, and I've come to understand what my purpose is in life. And by having this experience with my dad and by going down this rabbit hole and studying all this stuff about the mindset and the mind, like and with my film background, I realized that there's not a lot of people who's aware of this stuff. And I can see when I talk to people, now that I'm more aware of it, I can hear the things that people are saying about themselves or the story that they're telling themselves. And I believe that my purpose is to take this information that I've learned here over these last few years and studied and use my film making background and passion for film and stories and to blend the two together and to tell these type of stories to people. And I definitely want to have some fun along the way and, you know, just make some fun movies, but I want to tell stories, mainly true stories, but I want to tell stories about how powerful the mind is and what we can do with it in a cinematic fashion. And make them fun and amazing adventures. But the theme behind them and the stories and the ideas behind them are, you know, just become aware, you know, you can take control of your life, you know, and you can overcome the odds. You don't have to change the story you're telling yourself. You can be whoever you want to be, you know.
I love this because I grew up with an interest in film and cameras. Like, we'd go on family vacation and I'd run around with the camcorder dreaming of making a movie or a documentary about fucking Disney World or something, you know, or right. Wherever we went, or SeaWorld, you know, those places mattered and the animals. So I get the mindset. And even like growing up, I try to do like movies with friends in my family farm and flood my parents' farm at one time by blocking up the creek and trying to make a movie on the water. And, you know, get my sister and my friends to be the actors and actresses in it. But I would also, like, love dressing up in costumes and, like, trying to, like, play roles and put on show mm-hmm. for my parents and their friends when they came up. So it's weird. I didn't realize how much that was instilled in me. I get it. I was an entrepreneur always. And, like, I always was an athlete. But I never, until you and I really started doing this, I didn't realize that this had always existed inside of me. And I think it's one of those things where if we don't pursue it and we don't open up our eyes and we don't connect our mind to God and our spirituality and really sit and think about who we are and what we're supposed to meant to do, we often, like, there's this misery and suffering, and it's usually because of comparison, because you're like, why are they so happy? Why are they so whatever? Why are they so rich? Whatever you're going to say. But the reality is once you start to align yourself properly, you'll actually discover a purpose, and then you don't give a fuck what anyone else says or does or has, because you know what you were meant to do, and it doesn't mean anything other than that you're on a path. And I like this a lot, which, you know, brings me to, like, I don't even know how to begin here. We all have motivators growing up, and we talked a little bit about your parents before and them being your motivation. But, like, in terms of now wanting to be an actor and wanting to be in front of the camera and also be the host of the show we're working on, Foodtopia, Eat, Love, Learn, like, what like, who have you, who do you think are the best actors out there? What are the ones you want to model after? Or, and how have you gone about getting this experience to be in front of the camera? I mean, what steps have you taken? What are you doing with your visualization? How about your education, et cetera?
Yeah, for sure. So the people who have always inspired me, I mean, there's so many phenomenal actors out there. I can just name who I'm a fan of and who, you know, if they come out with something, I'm like, absolutely, I'm going to go see that. But, you know, I like Meryl Streep is really good. I like Kathy Bates. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I love Tom Cruise is a big inspiration for me. You know, Will Smith and I would probably have to say the old school action heroes like Arnold and Bruce Willis and those guys, you know, Van Damme, those are the guys who I grew up on watching, Jim Carrey. Man.
I forgot about Van Damme. We're going to talk about him in a little bit. Keep going.
Yeah, man. I grew up watching Bloodsport and all that, and it was just like, you know, with him going, and all that stuff like that. That shit, it was dope, you know? Like, growing up watching it, I just was like, oh, my God. Like, this guy is amazing.
One of my favorite scenes is where he's, like, dancing in the club, and he's all drunk, and he's, like, doing his dance moves, and then he suddenly kicks everyone's ass. But you know what I mean? So, it's so over the top. And his pants are like hiked up to his freaking nipples, but you know, because he's got to do the splits all the time. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, man, Time Cop and Bloodsport and all that. I'm like, yo, like, absolutely. Well, why don't we reboot Time Cop? You know, like,
I love that movie. What a trippy ass movie.
Yeah,
like seriously, I love that one. Yeah, and like Double Impact, like where he plays
both
characters.
Him and Dennis Rodman, but you know about Double Impact?
Yeah, oh no, that's Double Impact is where he's a twin.
Oh yeah.
But I do know what's the other one you're talking about. I'm gonna look it up while you're talking. But anyway, your influences, keep going.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, man, watching these guys growing up and just they were my heroes, you know, Stallone and Schwarzenegger and all these guys, like they were just who I wanted to be, like, you know, and be on the silver screen and the movie posters and things like that. And you know, I think there's a difference between also like Ryan Gosling. I like now granted they're more, you know, I'm naming off more male actors, but
the movie, by the way, with Dennis Rodman, it's close. It's Double Team. So he did Double Impact where he plays his own twin and then he's like Double Team with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. And Mickey Rourke, who plays Stavros.
Yeah.
So that movie's so funny. At the end, there's like a bomb that goes off. Oh, and Mickey Rourke steps on a landmine, and there's a tiger that comes out. And he has to choose between letting off the landmine and blowing up or getting eaten by the tiger. And it's like then there's an explosion that goes off, and I think Dennis Rodman comes out of nowhere and like pulls a soda vending machine in front of them to block the explosion so they don't die. I mean, it's so over the top, but it's classic, yeah. Like 90s early 2000 you know, filmmaking. But
yeah, I know when we killed films for a little bit, we killed action films all the way. Even Sylvester Stallone had trouble making it during the late 90s early 2000s. He did that one movie, Drive, or whatever. I can't remember about the Formula One, but anyway. Driven.
So, but these are the guys, you know, who I watched and wanted to be like. And then, you know, we had the newer version guys, or, you know, over time, you know, Denzel, stuff like that. But you know, what's my guy who played Michael Keaton? I mean, they're just phenomenal, you know? So, you know, these are people who I just would watch and admired their work and thought that they were phenomenal. And I would try to impersonate them and be like them. And then, the work that I would do would be definitely studying, films. I mean, when I watch a film, I don't just, because I know so much, I don't watch it how everyone else watches it. You know, I'll watch it as a fan, but I can also be watching it too as someone in the industry. And I always, the goal is to be able to get to the point to where I can let the filmmaker side, that switch turn off. And that really only happens when a film is firing on all cylinders. And because I begin to notice little things that are like, oh, that doesn't make sense in the story, or this acting is bad, or this visually, the cinematography is bad, or the sound is bad, and it pulls me out of it immediately. And my eyes are also scanning the screen too, like looking for so many different things. But when all those things are together and firing on all cylinders, that part of my brain when I'm watching the film turns off and I become a fan again. And it's almost like a drug. That's what I'm always going, why I'm always going to the cinema and always, you know, watching a series, is because I'm searching for that feeling again. And I'm searching for the illusion, you know, that's what I want. It's an illusion that we're watching. And the things that I've done with, I've taken, you know, studio acting classes. I just finished up a class for the last 3 months, a great studio where I met some amazing talent, and, you know, I was definitely pushed there in certain areas. I've got some great feedback there. I've done theater a few times at some small theater or acting studios, but definitely studying films, writing, and just constantly finding way, reading books on acting and different approaches and different things like that, one-on-one classes, and really just kind of putting myself out there and trying to continually sharpen the tool. But I've also learned like the approaches that help me, and understanding like scene study and figuring out what's the objective of each character, what's my objective in the scene, how do I approach it, how do I want to play this, but then also being bold enough to commit to the decision and writing it all the way through. If I make a decision on how to play a scene and it's the wrong way, like I'm going to go for it. And it may be completely wrong, but that's fine, because now I know where I lay, and I committed to that decision. I mean, it's like almost every take you have to commit, or every go, you have to commit to the decision that you're going to make on how you're going to play the scene, and don't break character. Like, ride it all the way through until it's like being playing sports, until they blow the whistle, until they yell cut. I'm not stopping. We're going all the way. And I've also learned, this has helped me a lot, by being able to understand how I work best. For me, it's a ton of repetition, tons and tons of repetition. I like to go over the blocking. I like to go over the lines over and over and over. And like, hey, what do you think about this? Do you think I should go it this way? Do you think, is that too much? Should I come here? What if when I go here, I turn here and say this instead of going that way? And I want to explore all those things. And then once we say, okay, this is how we're going to play it, and I know everyone doesn't do it this way, but for me, this is what I love. This is how I get the best out of myself, is we run it into the ground with repetition, and it eventually, and this kind of comes into with the subconscious stuff that we were talking about before. If we run it into the ground with repetition, it's like shooting free throws. It's like muscle memory. Eventually, you don't even have to think about what you're going to do because you've done it so many times. And to me, that frees me up to then allow inspiration to come in. I now have a firm foundation of, I know where I'm supposed to go, what I'm supposed to say. But if I fly off the handle, or if something comes and I get an idea to do something funny or wild or whatever, or to try something, I can do that. But then I know, and that may be off book or off script or whatever, but then I know I can go do that, but then I can find my way back to continuing the scene, or at least I know where we're going to end at, and I can do that. And to me, that's a lot of freedom, because the foundation is there. And if I don't know, I have the foundation, but if I lay the foundation strongly enough, then that frees me up to be able to not think about it, and it's there subconsciously, and I can always go back to it whenever I need to, and I can then begin to play in the sandbox and explore more in my acting artistic decisions, you know. So that's what works for me. And then also too, when watching films, when I, or watching a show series or a film, and I look at the decision that the expressions and the decisions that the talent has made in a particular scene, I think, how would I have played that? You know, how would I would have done that? How have I would have delivered that line? What's the look that I would have given? You know, and I've noticed over the years that I've been able to, I communicate really well non-verbally by shooting looks, you know, or in expressing without saying anything, and then also playing with my voice and pitch and tone. And I've just learned that those are my strong suits. But then if I also come to understand that not everybody plays the same way. Some people don't like to rehearse at all. Some people just like to jump right in, you know, and I rather learn how a person works ahead of time so I know, and then try to meet them in the middle. But at the same time, I've also had to just make sure that I was prepared for the scene and then show up and be ready to go. So, but I always would like to go about it in the way that puts, you know, that complements my strengths.
I love this. So let's talk a little bit more about this a little bit, because I think you just really touched on some important things. Like you're talking about like how your mindset is and what you're thinking. And we talked about putting yourself in a situation in the future so you could make it happen. And doing so, you're like, you know, you're rapidly developing. I don't want to give away what you're developing it, but everyone knows that this Miami Steve thing was like one of this brilliant things that are going on. It totally blows me away. And I'm pretty smart dude. And I think of things pretty thoroughly, and I integrate things, and what you're able to do there and what you're doing there is pretty impressive. So talk to me about your passion for writing also, because, you know, one of the things we talk about all the time is like, I'm always like, you know, Steven, you need to write more. You're really good at this. So talk to me about where you learned the writing from, because I think one of the great things about being an actor is if you can write your own roles. We talked about Sylvester Stallone, you know, exactly. We talked a little bit about that. So talk to me about what you love about writing. Talk about to me how you've perfected this skill, and talk to me about, you know, the connection between acting and writing.
Absolutely. Well, you said it there with Sylvester Stallone writing this, and, you know, writing the role for himself with Rocky. And then also, too, a lot of people don't know this, too. Jack Nicholson, too, did the same thing, where he said that he began to see advancements in his career because he began to write. But at the end of the day, no matter what, the story always begins with, or the project always begins with the writing and the story. So for me, I kind of always shied away from writing. I was always like screenwriting. I've always enjoyed writing in general. Like I'll journal and write poetry and stuff like that. But screenwriting was something, I kind of had a bad experience with it, because when I was in film school, I didn't fully understand like the approach and dynamic to screenwriting. And I part of that was, the first thing was, I didn't to be honest, I didn't have a great screenwriting teacher. And when I got a different one, when I kind of like took an advanced class, so that kind of like the first experience I had was just kind of like a lackluster experience, and I was just like, okay, whatever, I need to get through this so I can get this credit, you know, and pass this class, because I wanted to focus mainly on the camera department. And then I had another teacher who was teaching screenwriting, and it was like advanced screenwriting class that I took. And I was already coming in on a rocky foundation, but like I just didn't have the confidence to go about it, and I didn't believe in myself that I could really do it like that. And I think belief is a big thing with performance. The two are connected, and I just kind of didn't have that confidence and that belief. And we had to come up with a story, and I had came up with an idea, which I thought was a good idea. And when I pitched it to the class, and started to like write drafts and stuff like that, they started to make fun of me. So it wasn't a great experience, you know. And I just kind of like left that at that right where that was and was like, okay, well, I'm not a writer, you know? And I've found myself over the years kept saying that I'm not a writer. That goes back into what we were talking about before with like the story I'm telling myself. Well, some of the people, well, really it was one main person who really, like, I looked up to in relation to writing, which is my older brother, Daniel. And he's a phenomenal writer. And he basically just began to talk about writing so much and story and, like, you know, how I am about cinematographers and, like, the different actors and stuff like that is, like, how he is with writers and directors. But, you know, he would begin to say things about writing a story and structure and, like, you know, the stakes aren't high enough. We would be watching a movie together, and then he would be like, this isn't great. And I'd be like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, like, you're being a harsh critic. But then he would begin to explain, like, the stakes aren't high enough. I don't really care about what the characters are going through. This doesn't really matter to me. You know, it's just taking too long. It's, you know, almost 30 minutes into the movie and the inciting incident hasn't happened. Like, I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I began to understand this. The more I would watch movies, the more it began to make sense. And then when I came up with my project, Miami Steve, I was in a position where I was asking for assistance with the writing. And, you know, he pretty much did one of the best things that could have ever been done, which is he told me, write it yourself. And I'm like, what? And I began to, and the first draft was crap. And I just kept going to give it to him. He would keep going. This is all right, but keep going. And I kept doing it in multiple drafts over and over and over. And I began to basically cultivate a skill. And I started to pick up books on writing and screenwriting. And I'm looking at, you know, the 3-act structure. Really, it's a 4-act structure. And I began to look at usually around the 15 to 17 minute mark here. Inciting incidents should happen, and then looking at stakes and in relationships and character-driven stories and Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey and how that's conducive to life in general and all of this different stuff. And I just was like, whoa. I think I also heard an interview one time, I forget who was saying it, but who was giving the interview, but the person in the interview who's I think it was Will Smith, but he was talking about how he said he had a family member that wanted to be a filmmaker, and he like said he rattled off all these different books for the person to read, and the books that he said in the interview, I wrote them down and I bought them and I started to read them, you know, and I began to understand story a lot more. And then as I'm doing this, I'm still watching movies and going and watching them and seeing, like, okay, this makes sense now. I know now from the perspective of story and screenwriting why I don't like this, or why this dislike, like why I'm uninterested, or why this is taking too long, or why this doesn't make sense. And I just began to educate myself and then go back to the drawing board and write more and more. And then once I began to do that, more ideas for stories began to pop up in my mind. And then I just began to write more and exercise that muscle. And it was just one of those things that kind of began to come together. But it puts you from a when you understand how to write a story and you understand story in general, since it all stems from that in general with filmmaking, it just allows you to understand the emotion and subtext and all that's behind the words that are on the page. So then that you can allow, like, let's say, for instance, you know, the line is, you don't love me anymore. And that line can mean so many different things, or it can be delivered so many different ways, because it's like, okay, well, what's going on here? What's the situation? Is this jokingly? Is he saying it seriously? Is this manipulative? Is he trying to win the person back? You know, is this a tough conversation? You know, so there's so many different angles and ways to play it. It just begins to open you up more to be able to understand the overall storytelling medium in general for screenplays. And you know, I just began to write more and more, and I began to have more ideas, you know, and I would jot them down. I was like, huh, that'd be interesting. Yeah, what if we did do that? And then kind of get into it and begin to write. And it's just another skill that helps me understand how the overall ecosystem of filmmaking works in general. I mean, I want to know about every single aspect. That's why I've worked in all these different departments and been in front of and behind the camera, and I write and I shoot. You know, I know how it all works, and I'm now able to leverage all of that information and experience for when I'm in front of the camera.
I love this. And so I want to touch upon this. You said something about reading. How important is reading to you for your educational experience, for you to grow? Like, how much do you read? How long have you been reading? How important is this skill to you? Because I think it's important that we anchor this for the audience to talk about. Like, you like to read. You mentioned it, and you read when you're curious about something. Let's talk about that. How important is it to you?
Extremely important. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I think they said the average millionaire reads like, what, 60 books a year or something like that, 75 books a year or something like that. And it just became a thing where, like, when I was younger in high school, I hated reading. It was boring and I didn't like it. When they had in middle school, they had us reading the different books and stuff like that. And I never really was into it. Some of it was partly, you know, I was a dreamer and I was always like in my imagination and doodling and stuff like that. But I just didn't have the interest into it. And it wasn't really until later, after high school, probably after college. Really, actually, you know what? I take a step back when I say that. It was when I was a few years before I left Atlanta. The thing that really changed it for me is I just kind of took a solid look at my life and I was like, I'm not really happy with how this is looking and the direction we're going. And then I went and I looked at my cell phone usage and I saw that I was spending over 8 hours a day scrolling on social media. And I said, holy shit, that's not good. And I said, if I'm doing 8 hours a day, what could I be filling this time with? And I'm like, that's exercise, that's reading, that's writing, that's all these different things. And then I just began to look at the areas in my life that I wanted to improve upon. And I just started ordering books. And I spent more money on books over the last couple of years than I've ever have in my entire life. I mean, I have such a pretty decent sized library now where I've made a nice chunk, you know, into the things that I've read. The majority of the things, probably 99% of the materials, all self-help, you know, from mindset to, dealing with people to spirituality, to relationships, to communication, money, finance, and the film industry, understanding the business, all of those different things. Like, so reading has become extremely important to me. And the interesting thing that began to happen with me is I would go through a handful of different books, and then it was almost like when I would finish one book, I would go put it back on the shelf and I'd be looking at because I ordered so many, I'm like, what should I read next? And I would sometimes randomly, quote unquote, randomly pick the next book. And when I would begin to get into it and read it, it was almost as if all the material that I had read prior in the other books had prepared me to be able to receive the information from the new book that I had just picked up. And I've noticed that happening multiple times. And it just, the information is just compounding. And compounding and compounding, and I've noticed that just the things that I'm thinking about and how I'm viewing situations is completely different. I mean, I grow every day because I'm reading. I'm not the same guy I was yesterday. You know, I'm learning something new every single day. So it's the rubber band is being stretched back further and further and further, and it's going to get let go. And it's just going to be crazy, but reading is extremely important to me. Anytime I go anywhere, it's part of my daily routine is get up and read at least 10 pages a day. Now that I'm doing 75 hard, but reading at least 10 pages a day. Right now I'm reading a book on influence and communication, the power of influence and communication. And I mean, I had a handful of different things today where I was just like, wow, I didn't know that. And I noticed also the big thing for me, here's one thing that I really suggest to people. What helps me is I will get the hard copy book or paperback book, you know, physical copy of a book, but then I will also get the audio. And if you listen to the audio while you're following along in the book, I guarantee you, you'll pick up on it faster. Like it works wonders for me, you know, and that's just something where I'll go along and I'll highlight where I'm going and I'll little notes in the book. Wow. Amazing. Mind blown. I never knew that. Or this is exactly what I was thinking before. Sometimes when I'm trying to find an answer to something and I'll be going through a book, I'm like, this is exactly what I was thinking of. Like this guy literally like, this is spot on. So I think as you continually read and you get drawn to certain books, sometimes you don't even know why you got it. You just get it, and then you start to read it. This looks interesting. This title, what is this about? All right, whatever, let me get into it. And then you begin to read it. I think, you know, we're drawn to different things. We're drawn to different books or materials or different, you know, things in our lives. And the universe is guiding us to try to help us get to where we're trying to go. And if we didn't follow that impulse to get that book, to learn that information, to then that will lead us across that to the next thing to get us, you know, to what it is that we're seeking, you know, it all kind of goes nowhere. So keeping an open mind and being a student of life by reading, and it expands my vocabulary. I'm able to hold conversations with people from all walks of life. It's helped me with active listening by listening, hearing what people are saying, and then I can recall the information in these books and help people out. It's very informative. You know, I can pass information along. Someone will tell me about something that they're going on, that they have going on. I'm like, I just read a book, man, and they just talked about it. You should check this book out. I think it may help you. You know, it's like, that's just fun and great to do. I want to be able to help and contribute, but reading, again, is just extremely, extremely important. I will always continually you know, be a student of life and continually read.
What's the most impactful books you've read recently?
I would say the game changers for me are Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself by Dr. Joe Dispenza, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I'll give you five. The Power of Awareness by Neville Goddard. Ask and It Is Given by Esther Hicks, and The Power of Intention by Dr. Wayne Dyer. I mean, those are just bangers. Those books are just game changers for me. And I mean, it really just compounded everything for me, but those are probably the top ones, because you've got intention, you've got spirituality, you've got the metaphysical, visualization, and business and life, all kind of all, and finance and money, all kind of in those five books.
I love it. I love it. In film, and you talked about like a bad teacher in writing, you've talked about maybe some of the things that influence you. Who have been your best teachers in the film industry? Who have the people, like, and why? Why have these individuals taught you more? Why did they give you a better leg up than anyone else? I think we talked about a teacher, maybe you and I offline. I don't know if we talked about it on the episode, and mm-hmm. I just listened to it twice. I should know this, but I can't. We talk so much, and we've had other conversations now with the TV show and everything like that for Futopia that I can't remember, but talk to me about who's influenced you the most, who's had the greatest impact on you, and why. In terms of not mentors and stuff like we talked about before, or actors, I mean, actually who helped be the catalyst in Steve and Miami Steve for you to be in the film industry?
Yeah, absolutely. One guy that comes to mind immediately is a cinematographer. When I was in school, His name, by the name, he's an amazing teacher, and I haven't talked to him in a while. I trust he's doing well, but he's a cinematographer by the name of Milton Santiago. And Milton came in, it was almost like the Goldilocks and the Three Bears. The first teacher was like very hard ass, you got to do it this way, and if you don't do it this way, it's not gonna. I'm just like, whoa, like chill out. And the other teacher was kind of a little bit of a pushover, like, oh, you know, if you want to light it this way, you can. If not, that's fine too, and you know, whatever. And but when Milton came in, he just put it in a way that I could understand it, and it was fun to learn. And then the biggest thing, because like prior to that, I couldn't see what they were talking about. And just when Milton was teaching cinematography, I was like, I could see it. I get it now. Like, and it was, I remember I was working. It did, I was working with him on something, and he kind of pulled me to the side, or we were just talking, you know, in between it. And he was like, you know what's interesting? He's like, did you know that light was is found in every known element in the universe, and that we that means we ourselves are beings of light? And I was like, what? Like, and this is prior to really like having the in-depth knowledge of spirituality and everything like that that I do now. Back then, you know, I was probably 22, 23 years old when he said this about a decade ago, and I'm just like, what? And but it was like stuff like that that made my mind wander. It made me really think about different things. And you know, then we learned about you know, outdoor cinematography and just only using the sun as a source, and no other sources of light, just only the sun to light the scene. And then while we were doing that, we have to, in order to properly gauge and prep, we have to look at the trajectory of the sun over the course of the day, and know like the best times today, the best times to shoot during the day are from like sunrise to about 11, and then about 1:32-ish until sundown. You never really want to shoot with the sun immediately high in the sky unless it calls for it. And understanding things like that, and like when we began to dive into that, it made me look more based off of that last comment he made about the universe and everything in light. I'm like, okay, well, let me understand the sun better. Like, since I'm going to be working, since this is my source, I'm not working with lamps, I'm working with the sun. Let me understand the sun better. So then I began to look more into the sun and understanding like stars and light and what that is. And then that opened my mind up to the cosmos and so many other things. But it was just like that little spark of that little nudge, you know, saying things like that. At the time, he probably didn't know what he was doing, but that was one thing that really opened my mind up to just thinking differently. And it made me appreciate cinematography and light and lighting a lot more, and sculpting images with light, you know, and chiaroscuro within paintings and photography, you know, and creating three-dimensional images and what that means. And it just changed how I look at things. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, you know. And he also began to let me help him out and get me positions on some of his productions outside of school. So that was like, you know, another thing for me. And he was one of the people that really made a difference in my experience.
I love this. You spend a lot of time with cameras. You've been in the camera side. You really like the camera part also, and like directing or having that ability when you're writing. Talk to me a little bit about like the, because you talked about light and filming outside. I think this is a good connection piece as we sort of talk about it. And we, you know, we sort of are able to make the next steps because I think it's important for everyone to understand what's really going on. But talk to me about being behind the camera, like your knowledge of cameras. Talk to me about that stuff because I think it's fascinating for me as a person that likes cameras and likes shooting. I don't even understand any of the stuff that you're talking about and lenses and the way movies are shot differently. Like we talked about if Utopia and shooting in Nashville versus one lens. And if we went to Miami shooting another one, not to give it away, but give me that sort of perspective and what that means behind a camera to you, because you have a lot of experience with cameras too, and sort of a desire and an interest in all of that.
Yeah, I'm a visual person, you know, I'm a visual learner, and I've learned a style of things that draw my eye. You know, I like specific things. And because I had such a great teacher, I was able to then begin to say, okay, this is what I like. This is what I'm drawn to. How do I recreate that? And just going and practicing that and shooting and playing with the cameras and trying to understand what am I really doing? Like, what can this thing do? And all a camera is really is a light capturing device. So then when you become aware of light and you're looking at, because it's very practical. Like if you look at the lighting in the room that you're in right now, if I was in that same room, I would be looking, like noticing shadows and things like that, you know, along the walls, or if a chair is casting a shadow, if there's shadows, you know, if there's something of a vase or something, a binder or whatever, a folder or something on the desk, and there's shadow and it's casting a shadow, I can look at, it's just how I look at things has shifted so much because I look at the lighting of things. So I can look at images now. I'm so cold with it. When I'm watching movies or I'm looking at images, I can look and say, they probably shot it with this. They're probably using this type of lens. I can look at the background and determine, you know, what f-stop or aperture they were on, or how wide open or closed down the blades on the lens is, just based off of what's going on in the photo, looking at an image and saying, okay, the composition and understanding the emotions that are being conveyed and the feelings that are being conveyed when shooting something one angle versus shooting it another angle versus using soft lighting versus, you know, harsh lighting. And it's just understanding all the different aspects of visual storytelling. And then going over and working only in stills for a little while. I had a stint where I worked in a photography studio, and that all of cinematography is moving pictures. So 24 frames per second. So in movies, or on screen, you know, TV shows and things of that nature, 24, when you take a picture, that is a single frame, and it takes 24 single pictures or single frames to convey 1 second in time. So what I began to do was, when I was working, I had a stint where I worked in a photography studio, and I was in a controlled lighting setting where I could begin to just play with different things and try out different things. And that helped me, that translated over into my cinematography, because if you can do one single frame, you can do 24. You know, and it translates right over. So I just began to look at the different style of lighting and what I liked and didn't like. And, you know, instead of using, you know, basic 3-point lighting, what would happen if we took away the fill light and we just use the key in the backlight? Or what would happen if we just use one light instead of three? What happens if we light the subject using one light and we have a bounce card, and we bounce, because you can bounce light rays. So you can have a light source. Let's say if the light is behind you, but we can't see your face. If I get a reflective surface, I can bring that in and bounce the light off of from behind you off of the reflective surface and light your face. You know, so it's like understanding that and understanding light is frequencies and wavelengths, and certain light travels at different wavelengths than other wavelengths, and understanding the science behind that. I just began to look at things way differently, you know, and understanding image distortion and what that even means, and breathing in an image when they're shooting a movie, and what breathing is. Just a quick example is, like, there's something called an anamorphic lens, and whenever you change focus from the foreground or the background, the image will expand or contract. and that is considered a form of image distortion. But also different lens flares and all the different types of lens flares and veiling flares and angel flares and all of that. And it's like, I know it so much now to where I can look at an image or look at a film or whatever and look and be like, they probably shot that on a Cook anamorphic lens and it's wide open. And you know, a couple of other things. And I'll go and look at what, who, you know, what they shot it on and who shot, and I was right, you know, and I'm just like, I knew it. See, you know, and also understand that different lenses have different looks and feels. You know, some of my favorite lenses are the Hawk V-Lite lenses. I mean, they're just, you want to talk about a beautiful image. Like it's, they make some stellar lenses. I'm a fan. You know, but then you also have vintage glass that gives a different look. You know, if you're shooting something that, you know, maybe set back in the past, you would want to use older glass because that's what they use. It was made in the, you know, 40s or 50s or 70s. And it has a different look and feel versus, you know, the Hawk V-Lite lenses I'm talking about versus a Zeiss Master Prime. Versus something else, that each lens has a different look, and you can begin to assign emotion and feeling to the images. So that then allows you to say, okay, well, in order to engineer this feeling and emotion or vibe that I'm going for, what are the tools that I need? The camera that can shoot it properly, the lenses and all those different things that come together that give you that image. And I also used to go to, I know I'm going on, but I used to go to a rental house in Atlanta, and I used to build and strip down cameras. And I had a relationship with the rental house there at Keslo Camera. Shout out to Keslo Camera. And they would allow me, I would call them and I say, hey, what do you got going on this week? And they would tell me, oh, we have this and this prepping. And I would, okay, I'll be there. And then I call and then I would pull up and buzz the gate and I would say, hey, it's Steven. Okay, beep. Gate opens up, they let me in, and I would spend all day in there building cameras from scratch and stripping them down and building them and stripping them down. And productions would come and load in from shooting, and they would allow me to go and network with them, and they would introduce me to them to help me, like, you know, build them relationships. But in between time, they would let me build and disassemble camera bodies.
That's awesome. I love this. Let's talk about this lastly as we start to finish up here, because I'm going to definitely have you on a part three, because we didn't even get into the deep conversations yet. If you could tell other kids or other people like trying to get into film, like, you know, you've been doing this for, you know, 12, 11 years, and you've started to make some major shifts, not to mention coronavirus happened, which fucked up everyone's lives in film and everywhere in the world, but particularly in film, because we just didn't produce anything really, because it was really hard to get people on sets, which I believe you figured out. But, like, talk to me about, like, if you could inspire someone or you could give a message to anyone, even if you want to get as deep as you want, what would you go back... Or even better, what would you go back and tell you when you were the age of 23, since you're 33 now? Like, what does all of this look like? What do you wish you knew then that you know now, for example, or that another kid would want to hear at the age of 23 that you didn't hear or you wish you heard? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, if I could go back 10 years from now, I would, from just life in general, I would probably tell myself, go, like, stop caring so much what people think and go after what you really want to do. Like, go after the camera or the acting. But then also, too, stressing the importance of, you know, checking, having a good attitude, tapping into things, the spiritual side of things. And having the appreciation of the medium, of the art, of the art, the filmmaking medium in general, storytelling in general, because that will only allow me to go further, faster, and be able to appreciate, you know, not just cater towards one thing, but appreciate the whole art form in general. And I would probably say those would be the two main things, like, but definitely just explore the visuals more and understand that, and just be able to leverage. I would like probably tell myself to get going what I'm doing now, to start doing that now, or start doing that back then now, instead of, you know, to get started early, if that makes sense. And one other thing I thought about to answer a question you asked before is in relation to what am I doing to help with like the acting and everything. Is so with this project that I've created with Miami Steve, we've talked about briefly, you know, I haven't gotten into the details too much, but another thing I've done is I began to bring that to life through my Instagram. So it's like, I'm not waiting for the opportunity. I'm creating my own opportunity through this social media platform.
I love it. Anything else that we left out there, Steven? That was like really thorough. We crushed this one again.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. At the moment, no, I just, it's also just to other people who have interest in film, go for it. Like, you can do it. The resources are there. You don't have to go to film school. The thing, you know, I'm not against film school. Film school is great, but it's just one of those things where, you know, they have specialized schools and programs, and you can get involved in it. And the resources are there, and don't be afraid to go after it and reach out for help. And the people are there, and you be a good person, you show up, you do a good job, you know, opportunities will present themselves, you know. So if you have a dream, go for it, have fun, you know, bet on yourself. You know, listen a little bit, because some people will give you a couple of gems. But, you know, for the most part, like, no one knows what's inside of you except for you. So you got to go for it. You know, you really got to say, this is what I'm doing, and, you know, turn a blind eye to the naysayers and go after it.
One of the things I'm going to ask you, because I think this is important to leverage this, what you just said, is this. Where are you hoping all of this goes? We talked about, I sort of laid out all the skills that you have, how you've stacked your skill set, your avid reading, you're wanting to get in front of the camera, you know, you're taking steps to do all these things. You've got all these skills you've started stacking inside and outside the film industry. Where are you hoping this goes?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, I believe that it will help me to expand in the realm of business, more so the film industry and business, so I can apply all these skills and, you know, knowledge to the industry and just approach it and tell stories in a different manner, you know, but then also to understanding the business in general, and helping me from the standpoint of entrepreneurship, not only within film, but then in the other areas that I have interests, like in real estate and fashion and things of that nature. And also, as I'm not only continuing to navigate through this industry, I can also continually grow as a person and help as many people as I can throughout my journey. You know, it's just the more that I'm capable of doing, the more people I can help, you know. And I do consider myself an agent for good. And I think that I just believe that, you know, I came across this information, came to me for this reason. I have all this experience, and I can tell stories, and I can blend the two together and be a unique blend of, you know, storyteller, where the things that I'm saying or the stories that I'm telling are cool and entertaining, but guess what? They're also true. And you can implement these things in your life and see change for yourself. You can grow, you know, you can start telling yourself a different story.
I love it, because I feel the same way. I feel like the creative ability, your creativeness, your ability to have visualization. We talked about healing from trauma from visualization. We've talked about like that importance in film. And again, I said it was going to be the last question, but I keep you're giving me nuggets that I don't want to just leave unattended. And so talk to me about the visualization that you're doing now for this future.
Yeah, so the one I'm implementing is through is from Dr. Joe Dispenza's program. He has an amazing program, and you can purchase it online on his website. He's also going traveling around the world now doing the tours, but it's basically tapping into the quantum field and visualizing what it is that you want for yourself from the space of the quantum field. And it's what it is you basically look at, you ask yourself, what are the, if I could be, you know, living a dream life or doing whatever this thing is that I want for myself, you know, what would that look like? And, you know, rattle off maybe 5 or 6 or 7 things that would encompass this thing that I desire. And I did so. And I think it was about 5 or 6 things. And, you know, it was from where I'd be living to the type of work I would be doing, how much I would be making, who I'd be working with, things of that nature, and the freedom that I have and the type of work I'd be doing. And you create a symbol that, you know, you, first of all, when you do that, you think about, how does that make you feel? You think about those emotions, you go, oh, that would be amazing. Like, that would be so perfect, you know? And then, okay, well, what are those emotions? Does that feel great? It feels fun. It feels freeing. It feels liberating. It feels lovely. You know, it feels grand and creative and all these different things. And you say, okay, great, perfect. You got those emotions? Great. Now, what is, if let's assign or anchor a symbol to these emotions that are connected to this desire that you have, and what's that symbol? And I created my symbol, and you just use a letter that would represent this thing, all these things. And anytime you think about this letter and everything that it represents, you conjure up those feelings and emotions. And we basically go and we enter into, well, first of all, we get connected or aligned with, you know, the chakras or the energy centers with the heart chakra, the throat chakra, the third eye chakra, and the crown chakra. And we activate those. And then from there, we, once we get into a steady place within, you know, activating the heart or those four chakras, the energy centers, we then visualize ourselves going into the quantum field. And then from there, we feel the emotions and we see the symbol that is associated with that desire that we had before. And from there, you just open yourself up to receive the images of that come along with that. You know, where are you at? What do you see? What would that look like? What are you driving? How do you walk? How do you talk? All of those different things. And for a while now, I've pretty much have a handful of different scenes that play that come to me. And I mean, I know them in grave detail. And I've seen them, and I can feel it. You know, there's been times where I've done it and it's brought me to tears because it's like, I know it's there. I know it's true. I can feel it, you know. And the more you do it, the more you reaffirm it, the closer you close the gap on it. So, and that's the biggest thing that I'm working on now in terms of visualization. And then there's some small things that I'll visualize that, funny enough, they're just like, oh, that was convenient. That happened. But in relation to the big one, I've really been using Dr. Joe Dispenza's work with entering the quantum field and creating new potentials through his work on his website.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And I'm going to implement that stuff into my series, Miami Steve. You know, and it's a really cool thing that we do in the series that's never been done before. And I think it's going to blow people's minds. But a lot of the stuff that's done in the series, you can do in real life and get the results. So it's blurring the lines of what's real and what's not. And the stuff that I've visualized and seen because I've learned how to write, I can now take what's in my mind's eye and put it on paper and translate it to people, into the audience. Visualizing helps with that.
I just think one of the best things about the human mind is we can create whatever we want, as we discussed in the last episode. So I think it's just hugely important that I wanted to anchor that for the whole audience, especially because you want to be able to see everything that we accomplish for sure. So thank you, Stephen. Where can they find you online? Where can they look you up? Give me all that information.
Absolutely. So right now I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram is probably the best. My Instagram is I am Miami Steve with one M. So that's I-A-M-I-A-M-I Steve. And that's really the one I'm most active on. My Twitter, I'm on Twitter as well, which I believe my Twitter is I am Miami Steve. Let me double check. Yeah, so same thing. My Twitter is I am Miami Steve, spelled the same way.
Love it. Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate you. Everyone listening in, I appreciate you guys, and I love you guys. Again, if you want to find us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And you can find me at Justin Bizarro on Instagram or on Facebook. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. Thank you again for everything, Stephen, and taking the time to do this. I know it's been hard to get in a part two, just how busy we are, so I appreciate your time for sure. And again, thank you everyone for listening in, and we're out.